We're doing Menachim Bet. We're finishing the story of the destruction of the first temple, which will lead us into the book of Daniel. We had seen that Menashe was a very sinful king, and we had discussed that he repented, but the Navi neglects to mention that in the book of Melachim. His son Amon took the throne. He was king for 2 years. He was also sinful. His servants assassinated him. And then his son Yoshio became king at 8 years old. And Yoshio was going to be king for 31 years. He was a very pious king. We discussed the story how Shaphan the Sofer brought the Sefer Torah that Chilkiyo, the Kohen Gadol, had found. And there are different understandings as to what the Sefer Torah was. Was it one Sefer Torah that they managed to hide when Menashe and Achaz were destroying the Sefer Torah? Or was it that that really they found the Sefer Torah? Or was it a koi? They were just trying to get him to repent. Bottom line, but he read about how the king is going to be exiled and all the people are going to be exiled. So he got very worried. And he said, we have to repent. And he sent word to Huldah, the prophetess. They said, she's a woman. Women are more merciful. Let's ask her. Now we have to ask ourselves, wait a second. Then why did David HaMelech say, Kirachim Avabanim? And here we see that women are more merciful. So that's for a different class. But that's something we have to ask ourselves. And Huldah told them, go tell that man. She speaks disrespectfully of the king. And this, the Gemara says, when women take power, they tend to treat men improperly. The Gemara says, we had two women who had power, who were prophetesses, and they both put the men down. Huldah and Dvorah. No, the Gemara looks at it badly. The Gemara doesn't look at it approvingly. But they were much greater than we are, so who are we? What do we know? But at any rate, she speaks degradingly to the king. She says, go tell that guy who sent you that God said the bad things will happen. Because you're pious, it won't happen in your days, but the city will be destroyed. And Yoshio tried to make things better. He tried to abolish, he abolished all idol worship. He destroyed cities of idol worship. He destroyed the temples where they'd serve. He destroyed the places where they'd sacrifice the children. He not only destroyed them, but he'd make them into public dumps, where people would go to the bathroom, where people would throw their garbage. He wanted to ensure that they would never again be reused. He did his best to purify the land of Israel. And he was king over all 12 tribes, because some of the 10 tribes returned. We know the 10 tribes had been exiled. The Navi Yirmiyahu had gone to return them. That's why he wasn't around. His relative Huldah was the one giving prophecy at that time. So Yirmiyahu brought back some of the 12 tribes, some of the 10 northern tribes, and he was king over all of them. And in the northern tribes as well, he tried to eradicate idol worship. And he destroyed every place of worship that he could find. He personally did it. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough. And at the end of his life, the king of Egypt wanted to pass through the land of Israel when he was en route to go to war against the Assyrian king. And Yoshio said, I brought the Jewish people to a level. Now we're keeping the Torah. And the Torah says, "Becherav lo tavo ba'atzechem." If you keep the Torah, a sword will not pass through your ground. And he didn't ask the prophet. He didn't ask Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu would have told him, no, don't go out to war. But he didn't listen. He said, no, the Torah says that if we keep the Torah, then no sword will pass through our land. He was wrong. The Torah means no sword will pass through your land to attack you. Paro wasn't coming to attack us. Paro sent them word. Why are you interfering? All I'm doing is passing through to fight the Assyrian Empire. Do not interfere. Yoshio didn't listen to him. He went to war. The archmen located him, and they made him like a sea filled with holes. And as he was dying, he was standing there on the battlefield, and the arrows were piercing through his body. He whispered and said, Sadiku Hashem kifihu mariti. God is righteous. I rebelled against what he said. I didn't listen to the prophet. And when Yoshio died, then the Jewish people felt like the destruction was well on its way, and in truth it was. They took him back. They buried him. His son Yoachaz, who was his younger son, took the throne. He was king for 3 months, and he was sinful. And then Paro was upset. Paro says, I just killed your king. You appoint the younger brother instead of the older brother. You don't ask me. So he took him and brought him into prison in Egypt. And he appointed as king in his place Eliakim. And he changed his name to Yehoiakim. Now, the older brother, Yehoiakim, is king. And he's paying a steady tax to Paro Necho. Paro Necho is the Paro who got Shlomo Amel's throne, tried to climb up to sit on the throne, and didn't know that the lion automatically moves its hand. It whacked him on the foot for trying to stand on Shlomo's throne and made him a cripple. That's why he's known as Paro Necho, Paro the cripple. He was crippled his whole life from the whack that he got from the golden lion. Yehoiakim is 25 years old when he becomes king. He's going to be king for 11 years. And Nebuchadnezzar comes in his second year. First year, Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, conquers the Assyrian Empire. The second year, Nebuchadnezzar comes and conquers all of Israel. So he conquers and he's not interested in destroying. He conquers Israel and he makes a deal with Joachim. I'm leaving you as governor here. You're going to be king under me and be subservient to me. 3 years Joachim keeps his word. After 3 years he rebels. And God doesn't want him to succeed. God puts it in his heart to rebel because God wants Jerusalem to be destroyed. And so the Chaldeans join forces with the Babylonians, who join forces with the Armenians and the Moabites and the Ammonites, and they all come in to destroy Yehuda. And all of this has been prophesied. The prophets have been yelling for decades and centuries, this is going to happen, and no one was listening. So they lay siege on Jerusalem, and after and after they conquer Jerusalem, Joachim is killed, and Joachim, after he passes away, his son Jehoiachin takes the throne. Now, the Babylonian Empire has crushed the Egyptian Empire, so the Egyptian Empire is no longer going to be a factor. Jehoiachin takes the throne, he's 18 years old. he's king for 3 months. Nebuchadnezzar comes back to Babylon and his advisors say, you know, a bad dog doesn't have a good son. If the father rebelled against you, the son's going to rebel against you. Why'd you appoint him on the throne? So Nebuchadnezzar returns to Jerusalem. His advisors say, don't leave his son on the throne. He takes Joachim and he exiles not only Joachim, but all the great leaders of Jerusalem. And not only is Joachim going to be exiled, but Mordechai at this point is exiled. Anyone who was exiled now was a great rabbi. The greatest leaders were removed from Jerusalem to try and ensure there would not be another rebellion. Notice, Nebuchadnezzar has conquered us twice. First he conquered Joachim. Joachim was subservient to him. After 3 years, Joachim rebelled. He quashed the rebellion. Conquered Jerusalem again. He's not destroying the temple. He appoints another king, and then he says, I take it back. Takes that king out to exile. Takes Joachim out to exile. And with him, he takes all the elders, all the wise men of Jerusalem. And that's why the Megillah stresses that Mordechai was exiled with this exile of Jehoiachin. And together with this exile are taken a lot of the children of Yehuda, and we will discuss in a little bit about some of those children, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, those children that are going to be taken to Nebuchadnezzar's palace. So now he takes he exiles all the army and the wise men and brings them out to Babylon. He takes the vessels of the temple and he appoints as king the uncle, Joachim's brother, whose name is Matanya. And when he's about to appoint him as king, one time Matanya walks into the room as Nebuchadnezzar is eating a rabbit alive. He's eating Ever Minachai. He has a live rabbit in his hand and he starts plucking out pieces of the rabbit and eating it. Now that's against Noachai laws. And Nebuchadnezzar is embarrassed that he's caught red-handed. So he makes Matanya promise, you're never going to reveal this. Never tell anyone. He tells Matanya, I'm changing your name to Tzidkiyahu. Tzedek Yah. Righteousness will be seen to by God. If you go back on your vow, God will avenge my righteousness. You promised me you're never going to reveal what you saw. Tzidkiyahu is 21 years old when he takes the throne. And he is also sinful. And the prophet is warning him and he is not listening. And Tzidkiyahu always thinks to himself, his real name is Matanya, he always thinks to himself, I have a tunnel that leads from my palace out to Jericho. And even if the city gets destroyed, I'll make it out alive with my kids. He's king for 9 years, and he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar. He hears everyone's talking about how great Nebuchadnezzar is. Nebuchadnezzar conquers all the cities and all. Nebuchadnezzar is so great and he can't handle it anymore. So he goes to the rabbis and he says, annul my vow. The rabbis annul his vow. And then he goes and starts telling the story about how Nebuchadnezzar is a beast, he's not human, he eats live animals, and he wants to degrade Nebuchadnezzar. He can't stand that everyone's saying how great Nebuchadnezzar is. Nebuchadnezzar gets word of this, he understands that Tzidkiyahu has rebelled against him, and he comes to destroy Jerusalem. And this time, he takes his army, he lays siege on Jerusalem until 12 years into Tzidkiyahu's reign, on the 10th of Tevis. That's why we fast the 10th of Tevis. On the 10th of Tevis, he lays siege on Jerusalem, and the siege is going to last for 3 years until finally, on Tisha B'Av, there's a tremendous famine. They breach the walls of the city. They come in, and they destroy the temple. Tzidkiyahu has been warned by the prophets, let go, it's over. give in. And Tzidkiyahu doesn't listen because Tzidkiyahu thinks, I'll make it out alive. And Yirmiyahu warns him. He says, you're going to come to Babylon, but you won't see Babylon. You'll be brought to Babylon, but you won't see Babylon. Tzidkiyahu always thinks that's ridiculous. And Tzidkiyahu, when he sees the city being captured, takes his family and runs through the tunnel. And God sends a deer, and the Chaldeans are hungry. They start chasing the deer, and God sends the deer to the entrance of the cave. They catch up with the deer, and they see Tzidkiyahu coming out of the cave with his family. The Chaldeans grab him, and they bring him before Nebuchadnezzar. And when he is brought before Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar tells him, what is this? You promise. You didn't keep your promise. So he verifies with the rabbis that they annulled the vow, and he is upset at the rabbis also, because he says, how can you annul the vow without telling me? He slaughters all of Tzidkiyahu's children before his eyes, and then gorges out his eyes, and leads him to exile to Babylon. And as Tzidkiyahu is being led to Babylon, Tzidkiyahu says, now I know what the prophet Jeremiah told me. I will be brought to Babylon, but I won't see Babylon. Everything he told me came true. I was caught, everything came true. The Jews are exiled, and the Babylonian king appoints Gedaliah ben Achikam, Gedaliah, as the one who's going to be in charge of the people in Israel. Gedaliah is left, and Nebuchadnezzar leaves behind people to produce the special glass and the special blue dye of Tcheles, because those are things that can only come from Israel. They had a way of manufacturing special glass and special blue dye, Tcheles dye, from the Chilazon. So he leaves them behind, and he lets some people stay around, and he appoints as governor Gedaliah. When people hear, the people who fled from the war, that Gedaliah is king, and he sends word to everyone, it's safe, come back. There's a man by the name of Yishmael ben Netanya ben Elishama, who was from the family of the king, and he comes with 10 men, and he assassinates Gedaliah. And he assassinates all the Jews and all the Chaldeans that remain with him. And now the nation sees that the governor has been assassinated, and they say, what's Nebuchadnezzar going to say now? He let us stay, and we destroyed it. So they ask Yirmiyahu, tell us, what should we do? And Yirmiyahu says, you won't listen to me. And they say, no, we promise, we'll listen. And Yirmiyahu says, okay, God says, if you go down to Egypt, you'll all get killed. Stick around here, and things will be okay. They don't listen to him, and they say, you're lying. And they go down to Egypt, and they force Yirmiyahu to come with him. So the last exile we brought upon ourselves. Not only was it brought upon ourselves because a Jew killed a Jew, the wicked Yishmael killed the pious Gedaliah, and Gedaliah erred because people told him, be careful, Yishmael is coming to kill you, and Gedaliah said, it's Lashon Hara, I don't believe it. And although he shouldn't have believed it, he should have at least taken precautions, which he did not. Gedaliah was assassinated, and the Jews did not listen to the Navi Yirmiyahu. They went down to Egypt, where they were subsequently murdered. And not only did they go down to Egypt, they forced Yirmiyahu to go down to Egypt with them. So now the exile is basically complete. The Jews have finished themselves off. The Jews themselves, out of fear, exile Jerusalem and go down to Egypt. And we're going to begin the book of Daniel, which takes us back a few years to the exile of Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim, if you recall, in the fourth year of his reign, was captured by Nebuchadnezzar. He was subservient for 3 years, and then he rebelled for 3 years, and then Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed him. And when he destroyed him, he exiled many of the Jews, and he took the vessels of the temple and brought them to Babylon. He brought them to his house of worship, so to speak. You, my God, you, my idol, this is your valor, you won this war. And then he goes to his chief officer, and he tells him, Ashpenaz, my chief officer, I want you to bring me some Jewish children, children that are good looking, children that have no blemishes, children that are brilliant, children that have potential to learn and understand, children that can contain themselves and stand in my palace and they won't start making jokes or suddenly have to go to the bathroom, and educate them. Teach them the Chaldean language, teach them everything we know, because I heard these Jews have tremendous potential. And the king sets aside that they eat from his own meal, they get special food and special wine. And he says, we'll raise them for 3 years, and at the end of 3 years, let's see what we have. So, among these children are 4 children from the family of Yehuda, from the family of the kings, and their names are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And this Ashpenaz, this chief officer, he likes them and he gives them new names. And these names reflect that he owns them. When people change someone else's name, it's a reflection, I own you. If I can change your name, I own you. So he changes Daniel's name to Belshazzar, which means Bel was the idol of Babylon. And Chatzar means wisdom in Babylonian. So he gives Daniel the name, instead of God is the judge, Bel is your source of wisdom. Hananiah, he changes his name to Shadrach. Mishael, he changes his name to Meshach. And Azariah, he changes his name to Avednego. So he changes all of their names from Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to Belshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Avednego. Shadrach is like a soft nipple. It means you're a mefuna, you're being pampered here. Hananiah is Honin Ya. God gave me what I am. He changed it to Shadrach. Mishael, what I've asked of God, and he changes his name to Meshach. Whoever sees you, you're so good looking, they automatically their anger gets subsided, or you're Moshech, you pull wisdom. Azariah, God is my help, he changed his name to Avednego. Gimel and Beis are interchangeable, and he means to say you're the Eved of my idol Nevo. Baal and Nevo are the Babylonian idols, so he named them Avednego, you're the servant of my idol Nevo. So he changes their names to take away the concept of God and introduce the concept of their idols. And Daniel has decided that he is not going to eat the bread of the pagans and he's not going to drink their wine. And from here we derive some of the laws of not eating non-Jewish bread and wine. And he asks the chief officer not to have to eat that food. And the chief officer tells him, I'm scared of the king. That he specifically said what food you're supposed to eat. And I'll see you guys that you don't look as good as the other children. And then he'll hold me accountable. So Daniel decides that he's going to the waiter. And he tells the waiter, let's make a deal. Try us out for 10 days. Give us lentils, give us beans, give us water to drink. And after 10 days, see how we look. And then decide. So he agrees. He eats their food and he gives them the beans, and after 10 days they look better than all the other children. And every day he'd take their food and give them water and plain beans. And the four of them, God granted them extra knowledge and understanding, and they were able to master the books and the wisdom. And Daniel was given an extra blessing that he could understand dreams. And when the 3 years were up, so Nebuchadnezzar commanded to bring the children before him. And when they were brought, the king interviewed each of them, and he said the top four are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they are forced to stand now as servants before the king. And any time he needed counsel, he found that they could give him better advice than all his other advisors, all his sorcerers. And Daniel is going to be in this position. We're going to discuss the different kings, because there's confusion with regard to their names, and that we'll discuss Thursday. I think we're going to pick up on Daniel. I don't want to wait till next week, because next week I want to focus on the book of Esther. So this Thursday we're going to try to finish what we're going to learn of the book of Daniel. Now, 2 years, so 2 years after the destruction of the temple, so many years have passed already, it's over a decade, and Nebuchadnezzar has dreams, and he's very upset because he can't remember his dreams, and he wakes up in the morning, and he calls all his advisors and sorcerers and he tells them, I had a dream last night and it was very upsetting. Tell me what my dream was. And the Chaldeans tell him, long live the king, tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. And he tells them, I forgot it. Now you guys tell me what it is, and if you don't tell me, then I'm cutting you up to limbs and I'm turning your houses into dumps. And if you do tell me, then I'm going to give you great wealth. So just tell me what's the dream and what's its explanation. Very simple. And now they're a little bit nervous. I mean, they were told that their life's on the line. And they say, long live the king. If you tell us the dream, we'll tell you what it means. And the king says, now I know that you guys deserve the death penalty, because you see that I forgot the dream and you're still asking me for the dream. Now, here's the deal. you have till sunset to tell me the dream and its explanation. And for sure, if you could figure out what the dream was, then I'll know your explanation is right. And if you don't, then it's over. So they say, look, there's no man on the earth who could tell you such a thing. No king ever asked for such a thing from any of his wise men. You're asking for something that's very difficult. And there's no one else out there that's going to give you such an answer. The only one are those who don't live among mankind, angels. Our sages say, they told him that there's no one here who could give you the answer. There's no Kohen Gadol. The only one who could have given you that kind of answer was the high priest. So he said, what do you mean the high priest? So they said, well, he could answer things that no one else knew. No one's around who could tell you that. So he says, so Nebuchadnezzar said, what do you mean? In the temple, there was such potential for wisdom, and you told me to destroy that temple? You guys told me to go to war and destroy that temple when you're telling me there was more wisdom there than anywhere else in the world? And when he hears this, Nebuchadnezzar blows a gut, and he tells his executioner, kill all the wise men. Go throughout Babylon and kill all the wise men. So, okay, to an extent. Seems that way, yeah?
Was that referring to the Urim Thummim?
Yeah, I was referring to the Urim Thummim, correct. So, the decree has been out, and the executioner starts killing. He's killing. And now it's Daniel and his friend's turn to get killed. And Daniel tells the chief executioner, he tells Arioch, he tells him, what's this audacious decree? And Arioch tells Daniel, what happened? And Daniel says, bring me before the king. And he asks the king, give me time and I'll give you the answer. And then Daniel goes home and he tells Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his friends, he tells them what's going on. He says, go pray that God should reveal the secret to me. Otherwise, we're all dead men, as are the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel goes to sleep and he has a dream and he's revealed the secret. And Daniel wakes up and he blesses Hashem. And Daniel says, Yehei Shmei Rabba Mevorach Le'olam Ul'olmei Olmaya. You want to know where the source for that is? Here in the book of Daniel. For God, He is the source of wisdom and might, and He's the one that changes times. He removes kings, He establishes kings, He gives wisdom to the wise, He gives knowledge to those that know and understand. He reveals the depths, He knows what's in the dark, light is always with Him. You, the God of my fathers, I thank and give praise. You who have the wisdom and the strength, and you've given it to me, and now you gave me what I asked of you, what the king wants to know. And then Daniel goes to the chief executioner and he says, stop killing. First thing, he's concerned about the other wise men. Before he goes to the king, he goes to the executioner and he says, stop killing the wise men. Bring me before the king and I'll tell him the solution. Did he need the executioner to go before the king? I don't think so. It seems like he just wanted the executions to stop. And Arioch quickly brings Daniel before the king. And he says, I found a man from the Jews that were exiled who's going to tell the king the solution. And the king says to Daniel, oh, your name is Belshazzar. Your wisdom is from my idol, Baal. Notice, he doesn't want to call him Daniel. My judger is God. No, Belshazzar, your wisdom is from my idol, Baal. Can you tell me my dream and its explanation? And Daniel says, what you're asking, the secret you're asking, my king, wise men, sorcerers, all the different forms of knowledge in this world can't tell you. But there's a God in heaven, and He reveals the secrets, and He let Nebuchadnezzar know what's going to be at the end of days. He gave you this dream. The thoughts that you had during the day went up to your mind at night. All day you were worried who's going to take the throne after you, what's going to be with the Babylonian kingdom. Well, that's what you dreamt about. God revealed to you what's going to be till the end of time. You, my king, your thoughts went up in your sleep, and God revealed the secret to you. And I, says Daniel, it's not that I'm smarter than everyone else, and that's why I know this secret. God revealed the secret to me. And now I'm going to tell you what your innermost thoughts are, because that's what you dreamt about. You, my king, you saw, and behold, there was this huge idol, this idol that had a huge base, and from afar you could see this idol. And it was awe-inspiring. Everyone who saw it got fearful. Now this idol, its head was made of pure gold. Its chest and arms were of silver. Its thighs were of copper. Its feet were of metal and metal mixed with earthenware. and you saw how this huge idol is standing there and suddenly a rock comes down. You didn't see that rock come out of anywhere. You didn't see a hand throwing it down. It suddenly comes out of nowhere and knocks down this idol down to its feet and presses it down to the size of chaff. Everything becomes this tiny piece of chaff, and a wind comes and blows it all away. And then this stone became this huge mountain that covered all of the land. That's the dream you saw. And now I'll tell you the explanation. You, my king, God has given you a very powerful kingdom. And you rule over everything. God gave you rulership over the animals and the birds and all the countries. You are that head of gold. And after you is going to be another kingdom that's less than you. They're not going to be as powerful as you. And then there's going to be a third kingdom that's weak, that will also be the potent kingdom over the earth. And then the fourth kingdom will be like metal, just like metal knocks everything down, so too that kingdom is going to knock things down. And that which you saw, that the feet, the fingers, some were made of earthenware and some of them were made of metal, that's because it's a kingdom that will not be unified. Just as metal and earthenware can never combine, so too, that's how that last kingdom is going to be a kingdom where you have different people in that kingdom, different nationalities, different nations, and they'll never be fully unified.
Sounds like our world.
Okay. And part of that kingdom is going to be very powerful, and part of that kingdom is going to be very brittle, just like you have partially earthenware and partially metal. And just as you saw that the metal tried mixing with the earthenware, so too they're going to marry people from other nationalities, but it won't go well, just like metal doesn't mix with earthenware well. And in the times of that kingdom, God will establish a kingdom that will be eternal, a kingdom that will not be destroyed, and the nation that stays to the last, that's the nation that's going to overpower all the rest, and that's going to be the eternal kingdom. Just as you saw that the stone came down from a mountain, no one threw it down, and it crushed everything else, you should know that the great God let you know what's going to be after your time. Your dream is true, and certainly the explanation is true. And Nebuchadnezzar, when he sees Daniel capable of telling him this dream, bows to Daniel and he says, let's libate and bring sacrifices before him. He is a god. What's Nebuchadnezzar doing? Nebuchadnezzar says, let me try to cause him to sin. Let me bring him down. I'll make him into an idol. And Daniel says, "Well, that's not the way it's going to work." Nebuchadnezzar proclaims, your God is the God of all gods. He's the one that reveals the secrets. He revealed the secret. And he makes Daniel a special officer in Babylon, and he's given a very high status. And Daniel says, I don't want to be the one in charge of everything. Give me three helpers, my three friends. Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah are his helpers. And Daniel became his top officer. Now Nebuchadnezzar says, how do I bump these Jewish people off? God just revealed to me that they're the ones that are going to last till the end. And they're going to overpower everyone else. How do I get rid of them? So Nebuchadnezzar says, the one thing God doesn't like is idol worship. So he says, if I could get the Jewish people to serve idols, that's what caused the destruction of their temple, that's what will cause them not to last. And it almost worked. One understanding among our sages is that the reason in the Megillah the Jewish people were almost destroyed was because of this plot of Nebuchadnezzar. He is going to establish a tremendous, tremendous idol. And he establishes it in the valley of Dura, which is a valley where there are scattered bones of Jews that were killed for going against the kingdom. One understanding says it was the Jews that left Egypt too early. Another understanding, there are different understandings among our sages which bones it was. Some say it was the Jews that the Chaldeans killed in the exile. So the Jews are standing in this valley. He gets all the Jews standing, and there's this tremendous idol. Can be seen from way afar. And he gathers all the Jews there together with the other nations. And the Jews are standing next to the bones of their relatives that were killed by the enemies. So now there's a very, very, very subtle message here. You don't listen, you die. Look at the bones. This isn't the story. Others before you didn't listen and they died. And so the Jews are standing next to these bones, And when Nebuchadnezzar gathers all the people, he has a tremendous orchestra gathered, and they're celebrating the inauguration of this idol. And Nebuchadnezzar makes it known that when the band starts playing, every nation, every person has to bow to the idol. And anyone who does not will be thrown into a burning furnace. And all the nations hear the band start playing, and they all bow to the idol. The Jews are standing there, and all the Jews bow to the idol. And at that moment, the heavenly decree comes out and says, they all bow to the idol? I'm going to let Haman get away with his decree. A few years later, Haman has his decree to annihilate the Jewish people. That decree came into effect, according to one opinion in the Gemara, because all the Jews, but four, bowed to the idol of Nebuchadnezzar. So, they see that everyone's bowed, and they can't keep track of everyone. But the Chaldeans, they see that there are some Jews who didn't bow. So they come to Nebuchadnezzar, their faithful servants, and they said, you said whoever doesn't bow will get killed, will be thrown into a burning furnace. There are those Jews that you gave them high appointment. They're your officers. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they don't care about your decree. They don't serve your idol. They didn't bow to him. And Nebuchadnezzar gets filled with anger, and he orders to have them brought before him. Now they know that there's a death penalty pending. The Pasuk stresses that they come in their royal clothing. From here we learn an important rule. Even when a person feels like he's going before the judge and he doesn't stand a chance, and they're about to decree against him, he should stand firm. He should wear his honorable clothing. A person, there's enough time in jail to wear the stripes. When you're standing before the judge, Chazal say, we learn from Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they think they're going into the furnace. What are they dressing up for? They're not planning on bowing to the idol. And they know they're going to be thrown into the furnace, and they have every reason to think they're going to die. So, the Pasuk says, nonetheless, they came in their royal clothing. They're being brought before the king. They're innocent. They've done nothing wrong. So, they they're brought before him. And Nebuchadnezzar says, is it true, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he calls them by their nicknames, that you don't serve my God, that you didn't bow to my gold idol? Now, he doesn't give them a chance to answer. When I have my band play again, you will bow to that idol, and if you don't, then even though you're my advisors, even though you're my top men, you should know I'm right away going to have you thrown into that burning furnace. And tell me, who is the God that's going to save you from my hand? Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah say to him, Nebuchadnezzar, we're not worried to answer you. Who is the God that's going to save us? There is one God, and he's the God we serve. And he could save us from that furnace and from your hands. And if he doesn't choose to save us, so you should know that nonetheless we are not bowing to your idol, we are not bowing to that golden idol, we are not serving your God. Whether God will save us or not, we don't know. He could. He may not. But he could, and we will not bow to your idol. And Nebuchadnezzar gets upset, and his face changes colors, and he says, heat up the furnace 7 times as hot as it was, and then he calls his generals and he says, it's hot, you can't come near it. Take Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and bind them and then throw them into the furnace.
Where was the name?
And the Navi doesn't tell us. Maybe we'll discuss it next time. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, their hands and feet are tied and they are lifted and they are thrown into the burning furnace. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, we'll pick up over here.
Yes, I did it again.